Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time. With your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? It's been a long week, so we figured we'd come kind of wrap things up with a tidy bow, or at least as tidy as we could come up with to reflect on the week that was, both in sports and in America. And to do that, you know, I got to bring in my tag team partner, the man from Southern California. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Marcus. I stand with NASCAR Vandenberg. How you doing, brother?
What's up, Nate?
Not much, man. I think the last time we talked was kind of before the events of the past week, where we've seen a lot of interesting discussion and dialogue going on. And I'm just wondering, brother, like, out there in California, how have you been personally, my friend, before we go any further?
It's quieted down since, that was 2 weekends ago. Everything sort of kicked off. Did you see what got canceled yesterday, Nate?
What got canceled beside the Confederate flag? No, I don't know.
Live PD, Nate.
Yo, live PD and cops got canceled yesterday, Marcus.
Live PD hurts, Nate. I won't lie.
That's your show?
That was my show, man. And listen, I understand why I got canceled. And I think more so had to do with sort of this cover-up than, you know, George Floyd. But the show did, I think, provide, at least for me, a perspective on cops that I probably wouldn't have otherwise, in terms of just, listen, there are definitely some bad cops in that show, and it feels like some of them don't even try to hide it, but then you see cops on there that you're like, all right, they seem like decent human beings, which, you know, the bar is low, but I was kind of surprised just because that show did so well for A&E that they decided just to at least cancel it for now, and then maybe they come back.
I was
going to
say, you think they just kind of like let things calm down for a bit and then bring it back once we're through this, not only this kind of racial moment in America, but also once we're through this pandemic, they kind of sneak it back on the schedule?
I think maybe on a different network.
Mm.
And maybe with a different format. Maybe it is, maybe they're working closely more with the police department or the community, but I don't think they can go with the same exact format.
Right.
As they did before.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. So, like, out here, it's been interesting, Marcus. Like, it's calmed down in certain instances, but in others, like, we've seen less kind of protesting and more action. Like, I don't know if you caught it on the news yesterday, because I was surprised. It actually made national news. There are people in Portsmouth and in Richmond going hard against these Confederate statues. There was like a scuffle out in Portsmouth, which is maybe 40 minutes away from where I live. And there was like a big scuffle between a group of protesters from like the NAACP and from like just various community groups versus like 10 people, like 10 old people that are so tied to the Confederacy. Like, I don't know what my man was thinking. Like, the dude fought in Vietnam, but you out here, you know, trying to fight for this flag. It's like, come on, baby. Go home. You ain't even supposed to be outside. You're 75 years old in the middle of coronavirus. Go home.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the other thing. With all of this, coronavirus is still out here.
That has not been canceled yet. That is still...
Not yet.
That is still prevalent.
Coronavirus is cancel-proof.
Yes.
You know what else is cancel-proof, Marcus Vandenberg?
What's that?
I guess this week on the show, he is a friend of the program, damn near family by this point. He is somebody who often hops in to talk about the world of football, both NFL and college, which might come into play this week as there have been some stories off the field in both of those sports. He is one of the hosts of the excellent Book in the Territories podcast. And I don't know. I don't know if I had the right to say this, Marcus. But just for me, coming from a Falcons fan, he is the only Saints of a certain pigmentation that I'm going to listen to this week. Because the other major Saints person of this similar pigmentation that might have said something this week, he on timeout for at least a month. I don't want to hear nothing from you, sir, for at least 30 days. But this man here that's coming on the show, he can speak all he wants. You know him, folks. Mike Mills from Booking the Territories is back with us. Brother Mills, how you feeling, man?
I'm doing good. You and Marcus, I wanted to jump in, but I wanted to be introduced first. I was very disappointed about Live PD being canceled. You know, I have three cousins who are New Orleans Police Department police officers, and I have seen actual video footage of things that give you a different perspective on from their, like, you know, their patrols that would give you a different perspective on, like, a lot of times what officers have to deal with. And I'm like Marcus, there were some, you know, I always say this in today's day and age, it's sometimes you get criticized, but there really are good police officers. I'm related to three of them.
Yeah.
That I know do a good job. They protect, they serve their communities. They don't look for opportunities to, harm innocent people. It has been a rough couple of weeks just based on that, because I know there are good officers. And then I go back to Live PD and what Marcus was talking about. I mean, you can see there are some officers on there that I question, you know,
West Baton Rouge,
you know, God, we could have a long talk about those dudes. We could have a long talk about them, Marcus. But yeah, you know, you see like some of them, and there are some others that you're like, huh, man, I question, you know, like, should you have a badge and should you be patrolling? But, you know, I will say this, like I said, I am related to three NOPD officers who I know protect and serve and do a great job serving their community. I feel bad for them because, you know, they're out there doing good work, and you got these idiots like the Minneapolis cops, and not just him, but all of the idiot cops who have, you know, harmed African-American men, women in the line of duty as they were in the line of duty. And we've seen death from it. And so it's been a rough week, man. It's rough. But as I say all that, I was sad to see Live PD go. I mean, my wife and I would watch it religiously. We were watching it with our 15-year-old probably a couple months ago. And, you know, we were having talks with him about, all right, well, if you ever get stopped, you know, here's what you need to do to ensure your safety and that you're not a threat. You know, hands at 10 and 2, turn the dome lights on, make sure your windows are down. That way they can see inside. And even then, you know, I would still worry when he gets stopped. So anyway, not to start us off on a somber note, but I was sad about that. But thank you for the invite back, Nate, and I look forward to talking to you and Marcus.
You already know, man. Even despite some of your questionable life decisions in the past, like becoming a Saints fan, you always welcome here on the Kings of Sport, brother.
Oh man, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
But so, maybe we should serve cops. Actually,
I was gonna say, yeah. Go ahead, Marcus.
Start. Yeah. So, I mean, they seem to be the latest that are now part of this cancel culture. And between, you know, defunding the police and trying to abolish the police, two terms that I think half of us don't know what it actually means. What are your, both your thoughts just about the backlash towards police in general, as opposed to just the people in the police force that are sort of out of pocket?
I mean, you know, like defunding the police. I don't even know what that means, like, to be honest. But like I said, I'll go back to what I said. You know, I don't want to take backlash from this, because I said this to someone on social media about 2 weeks ago, and they were like, there you go, taking up for cops. And I'm like, no, I'm just telling you my experience. I'm related to a few, and they're good people. I grew up with them. You know, I mean, I would trust my life in my friends' lives, your lives with them, if they were to ever stop you for a speeding ticket or anything. I mean, so like I see that side of it. So I don't know if I know enough to really comment on this whole defunding them and stuff and abolishing police. I have trouble like envision now if somebody can explain to me what that would look like post all of that, then maybe I'll better understand it. But like for now, I think for me, you just got to get rid of the bad ones. Oh, and not only get rid of the bad ones, but you have to have something in place to stop bad ones from being able to get into the force.
Yep.
That's the other side of it. So like, I mean, that's just how I feel, man. I used to, there was a police officer. He was a parent to one of the kids in my, one of my sports teams that I coached in the area for youth sports. And, he was a real nice guy, and I used to talk to him all the time. And this is 8 years ago. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. And even he would say, he's like, I hate when I see, you know, officers taking advantage of the badge. Like he would say that to me. He would say, you know, it's very unfortunate when it does happen. And he's like, and he told me, he said, if I was ever in position where that was happening and I was there, I would do something. He said, I can't tell you what I would do because it would be based on the circumstance. But he's like, I'm not just going to sit by and watch someone be harmed for, you know, a minor violation or no violation at all at that. So he's like, look, you know, I mean, the thing is, he's like, we got to figure out how to, and he said this, he's like, we got to figure out how to not get the bad ones in. We got to, that's the point that we have to catch it. So look, I don't know how you do that like 100%, but in my mind, that's how I feel. You got to stop the bad ones from getting in. You got to get the bad ones out of there too.
Yeah, I think Mike hit on something right there, Marcus, in that it's not enough just to get rid of the bad cops, quote unquote, right? Like that's if you had a fever and you started coughing, and instead of treating the fever, I just gave you a cough drop. Like that might fix the cough, but you're still sick. And I think when you look at law enforcement, Mike's right. Like there are a lot of good cops. I know a couple of them here in Newport News. But the thing is, if the system around them is either broken or not equipped to deal with these issues, to deal with these problems, we got to fix the system. And I think one way you can do that is, like Mike said, have, you know, stricter screening processes. You know, you can, you know, update your training. I think another way that you can do it is to fix what's going on in the community and society as a whole. Like, was it out in California? I might have misread this, Marcus, but where they were talking about the budget, instead of this number going to the police, let's just say 10 million. Instead of 10 million going to the police like normal, it would only be 5 million, and then the rest would be put into programs for mental health, programs for, you know, social aid programs, education programs, and things of that nature, so that you get to some of the root causes of crime instead of just dealing with the after effects.
Yeah, that was the LAPD. Their budget happened to be around this time of everything going on. So I think it was $150 million it took out from the LAPD. And my concern about that would be, I would rather see that money spent towards actually training cops, because I think that's a bigger issue across the board, is I don't think they're getting proper training. And or if they are getting trained, for some reason, it's people aren't sticking to it. So
I disagree. And we're also asking cops to do what they're not – what, even if they have the best training, we're asking them to do stuff that does not fall under the banner, if you will, of a cop, right? We're asking them to be social workers. We're asking them to be, you know, psychiatrists,
mental health therapists.
Right. And these are things that don't really fit into what you're hiring a cop to do.
Yeah. And one more thing. The thing that has, I guess, bothered me the most about the last couple weeks is, look, we all know George Floyd happened. If you're a cop, you would think, yeah, you're dealing with these protests, but the country is at a heightened level more than ever. This is the time to be on my best behavior, not fuck up, because all eyes are on me. And it feels like they're just like, screw it, like, we're going to double down on bullshit and just, you know, I think that the real eye-opening one was the guy in Buffalo who
was 75,
and they just pushed him over, and it's, you know, bad enough they pushed him over, but then to just sort of step over him and to pull the one cop off of him to say no, like, let him lay there. It's like, all right, come on, like, what are we doing?
That pissed me off to no end. That was I don't want to say one of the worst things I've ever seen, because we've seen some horrible things now, but just to see them push him over. I mean, he wasn't even a threat. I mean, what the hell was that old man going to do?
Yeah.
What the hell was that old man going to do? And like, he just, and look, I get it. He's 75. I'm sure he is fragile. I'm sure he doesn't have the best balance. So what the hell are you walking through him for?
Yeah.
Come on, man. And then I thought, like, my wife showed it to me. Like I said, I hadn't been paying attention to social media. She's like, look at this. When I saw that man fall back and his head bust open.
And that noise, yeah.
I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? And they just kept marching.
Yep.
And then they all quit. They quit in solidarity of the two bad apples, or the two cops that were sort of most responsible.
And you wonder the worst part about that? Like, because there were so many of them, there's no way they all saw what happened. So, like, but if you watch what happens on camera, like the ones that quit, I'm like, why would you quit?
Yeah, right.
You saw the same thing I saw. So, like, it just baffles my mind. That was horrible. That was just horrendous to see that man's head gushing with blood. I thought he was dying. I thought he was just
Yeah.
I'm like, this man's dying on camera right here. We're just watching a man just bleed out from the head.
Mm.
Oh, man. It angered me. It angered me to no end, man. That's the type of stuff we just don't need to see that.
And what I say, one of the things that has actually, and it sounds even weird to say it, Mike, that has maybe given me a little bit of hope through all of this is, you know, because like you said, this, you know, going back to George Floyd, this isn't the first time we've seen something like this happen.
No, it's not. It's happened before, right?
Right, but I feel like the reaction, and in particular the reaction, different this time. And I don't know if you felt that, Mike, but it feels to me that white people are taking this maybe more seriously than they did when we talked about Eric Garner or Tamir Rice or Sandra Bland or any of these other names of black people who were killed by the police that you can mention. Like, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because everybody's stuck inside during the coronavirus and this was the only thing that was on because there's no sports, but it feels like for whatever reason George Floyd's death resonated with white people in a way that all those other names hadn't.
This is what I think, like, happened. Like, before, I mean, in human history, American history, before there's ever real change, things usually get worse before they get better. And I think what ended up happening is, for me, I think people just, there's a lot of despair, you know, the coronavirus, everything that's happened, you know, people out of work, you got, you know, millions and millions and millions of people out of work. Mm-hmm. So people are struggling. So you add fuel to the fire with what happened in Minnesota. And it just, all of a sudden, it's like combustion, boom, it just goes off and it explodes. You've already got people on edge, and it was like the gasoline was already in the streets. Someone just threw a match on it. And you see people coming together. You see people wanting justice. And I just think that's what it was. I think it was like the perfect storm. And it's probably the, not the right words, but it was like the perfect conglomeration of things happening in time. You know, we've seen these things happen to African-Americans by the hands of police over and over again. You know, change is called for, but, you know, it very little seems to happen. But now you have a moment in time in history where, you know, it just got worse and it keeps getting worse. And then you dump on the coronavirus. You got all these people who are out of work and people already frustrated. And it's like, at the end of the day, eventually, as a society, people go, enough is enough. And I think that's what you see here.
Mm. I don't know if I'm overstating this, Marcus, and maybe Mike can help me crystallize my thought. But in a way, it feels like everything that Black people have felt like forever, because of, like you said, the extenuating circumstances of the coronavirus and not being able to have the freedoms you normally have. And a lot of people are hurting economically because of this virus. It feels like the frustration that Black folks have had has now, like white people can feel our pain. Like, it's remember White Man Can't Jump, where Wesley's like, Woody, you can listen to Jimmy, but you can't hear Jimmy. It feels like white people are hearing Jimmy now, so to speak.
Oh yeah, I 100% think. I mean, just based on everything I've seen on the news for the limited amount that I've watched, it definitely feels that way. It feels like, yeah. And Nate, I was waiting until you brought up Breeze, but it feels like something Brittany Breeze said after like Breeze made his statement. She was like, you know, for years we thought, you know, just, you know, being good people and not being racist was good enough. Yep. And Brittany went on to further say, and it was a lot longer than this, but she was basically like, you know, as white folks, she's like, we have to do more. And I think that's important, because here you have someone who, I mean, look, Breeze is a multi-millionaire. He's got more money than he's ever going to be able to spend. His children are going to, you know, there's generational wealth for years to come. His great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren are going to be able to live off of that as long as we don't destroy this world. So, like, you know, it's important for, like, somebody like them or Brittany to say that at that moment, because it's true. You know, like, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but while Dr. King certainly did a lot, he did more than a lot in the civil rights movement, you know, there were white folks that marched too. And I mean, this is not the same, so I don't want to make it sound like that, but you can't just have Black folks marching. You have to have more. And I think that's what you see like now. I think that's, it's like, you know, what the three of us would have seen in history books or in videos during the civil rights movement, since we weren't born at that time. It's like we're kind of seeing that again this moment in time in 2020.
But let's talk about that man, Drew Brees, the unofficial mayor of New Orleans. Marcus, you wanna set up for the people that, I don't know how you missed this story, but for the people that may have missed the story, set up what happened with Drew Brees and a lovely, lovely, wonderful company named Yahoo.
Yahoo Finance, yes. So I think it was the day after. What happened the day before?
Was it after one of the funerals?
It might have been either the funeral, or maybe it was the day. No, Malcolm Chan spoke out after. It's all blurring today. The last two have been a blur. Essentially, you know, Drew Brees was asked about, you know, the flag, and going back to basically 2016 when the protest, or not the protest, the taking a knee was more prevalent in the league. And Drew was very much back into his 2016 response of, like, you will not disrespect the American flag, and, you know, I will not stand for this. And, you know, essentially just being tone deaf and not really reading the room. to what was going on in the climate of the especially the current NFL landscape.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, this was a Yahoo Finance interview, and it took off in terms of just the response and reaction to it, to the point where the next day he issued an apology that morning, and then that evening he issued a second apology, basically owning up to his mistakes and, you know, saying that he was going to do better and he'll be part of the solution and that he's an ally. That led to the following day, a Trump tweet, of course, who was at the time still backing up Drew Brees and, you know, basically siding with Drew Brees. And I kind of joked on Twitter, like, look, this is your chance, Drew, to stand up to President Trump. If you're really about this apology, like, you know, you should go after him. And later that day, he put out a different Instagram statement, basically addressing President Trump. And I think that's when, you know, he really won people back over. In between that statement and his apologies, you know, his teammates had basically said, you know, we forgive you. But yeah. I think from a national standpoint, it wasn't until he went after Trump that people were like, all right, well, maybe he is sincere about all this.
So, like, for me, it's funny, Mike, because as much as I hate them New Orleans Saints, like, I've always had respect for Drew Brees. Like, I've always respected that man's game. I respected, you know, the stuff that he's done in the city after Katrina and whatnot. So when I heard Drew say this in the interview, at first, I was just kind of like, really? Like this how you feel, Drew? And then once we saw, like, Michael Thomas come out and say something, and some of the other players that have played with Drew come out and say something, I was like, yeah, he's going to have to address this. So as a Saints fan, like, how did it hit you when you first heard the comments, and then when you saw, you know, the apologies following that?
So first, Drew has done so much for New Orleans since 2006. I need to mention that. I mean, Drew has, he's given so much to the city. He's done a lot for a lot of people. Just recently, you know, I mean, I went back to 06, but just recently, with coronavirus, I mean, he gave $5 million, to assist coronavirus aid in the city of New Orleans. Drew Brees is not a terrible person. He is not a bad person. Drew Brees, like many of us, all people, white, black, Asian, whatever, he is, when he gave that answer and he said, you know, kneeling for the flag is disrespectful to the men in the military, he is speaking who fought in World War II and all the wars across the world. He's speaking of his grandfather who sacrificed, fought for the country, and he's thinking, like, I'm looking at it from my vantage point, from his vantage point. What the thing, and we'll go back to that term, the perfect storm, the problem with what he said at that exact moment, because don't be fooled by the memes you see on social media. He never kneeled for the flag. He kneeled before their game in London, before the anthem was played with the rest of his players. He did not kneel for the flag.
Kind of like that move Jerry Jones did with the Cowboys.
Yes, he kneeled with his whole team, but he did not kneel for the actual playing of the anthem. So I need to make that point. I don't think Drew Brees has a racist bone in his body. He is friends with too many African-American players. He has been too good to the city of New Orleans, which is majority African-American. Drew Brees is a good human being. When he said that, though, I was like, oh, my God. Because he's looking at it from his plight, in his point of view. The problem we have right now in this country with race relations is nobody wants to look and see the hurt and pain that others feel. Like, it's always about you, and you don't see what it's really about. I'm going to make a statement here, and I don't want to be controversial, but of course that's what it's going to be. for me, as an American, if the national anthem plays, I'll stand up and put my hand over my heart to this day. But you know what I will never condemn? I will never condemn anyone who wants to silent protest and take a knee like Kaepernick did. You know why? Because when our grandfathers, because my grandfather fought in World War II too, when they fought in World War II, they fought for the freedom to protest such things. And it's funny how, like, it's Drew didn't mean the way it came across. Now, it sounded bad, and his friends and player and his teammates were pissed off. but it's not, that's not Breeze as we think of him. He said you can't judge someone by one bad moment. That's a, that's another problem.
You got to look at the body of work.
You got to look at the body of work. And then two, I'm sure you've heard this statement before. We judge others by their actions, but we judge ourselves by our intentions. Like, you always have to look at, like, I always try to look when I'm talking to somebody, even when I talk to conservative folks, or, and when I say conservative folks, I mean like extreme conservative, extreme liberal, because I think there's a difference between like liberal and a conservative, and then extremes on both sides. So even if I talk to conservative folks, I'll like ask, like, why do you feel the way you do? I want to know. I want to know what in your heart makes you say certain things. Like, and I don't think in Breeze's heart, like, his intent was not to light the world on fire with that statement. He was speaking from his background, his family history, and saying what he said. Now, what happened, though, is the players, they were angry, which I understand, because at that moment, that was like, I don't want to say you could have picked a worse moment to say what he said at that moment, but you probably couldn't have picked a worse moment with what was going on with the country. It, again, perfect storm.
It was like the rare lack of awareness by Drew Brees. Like,
yes, he got sacked. The pressure was...
Yeah, he got sacked.
Yeah, it was a pressure sack.
Because, like, what you're saying is right, Mike. Like, on the face, the words that he's saying and then how he's honoring his grandparents and what the flag means to him, like, that's fine. But you have to be able to read the room and read, like you said, what's going on in the country and how people are feeling in that moment. And Drew, for whatever reason, didn't see that.
Yeah, he's looking at it through his eyes, and I truly believe Drew Brees does not have a racist bone, muscle, or tendon in his body. I don't know how you can play in, I don't know what the statistic is for the National Football League. It's got to be 80% African American, if not maybe a little less. But I don't know how you can play in a league like that and have a racist bone in your body. Now, I guess it's possible.
Not for that long.
Right. And the thing is, like, you think about the respect he's had from all of his players. Like, I mean, Mark Ingram is a good friend of his. I mean, Marcus Colston, I haven't even talked about this. I wanted to make this point in the show.
Since Hofstra. Thank you.
From Hofstra. Yes, sir. So Marcus Colston, who rarely tweets, and is, they called him the Quiet Storm when he played for the Saints. He helped build the Super Bowl team in 09. I mean, he got there in 06 as a free agent. Colston is one of the quietest people you ever meet. I mean, I've never met him, but, like, he's just not outspoken. He's not one of these rah-rah type of guys. He's not somebody who's going to run his mouth for anything. He tweeted out a statement. You got to go read it if you get a chance. And he was just like, I was just taken aback because this is not the Drew that I know. So, like, he and Drew were friends. I mean, they're good friends. And Drew was always so complimentary of Colston. And Colston loved Drew. Drew loved Colston. And for Colston to speak out, I think, like, that is one of the things that got Drew's attention. Because Colston was very, very, very eloquent in what he, in his reply. He wasn't like, you know, he didn't do the Malcolm Jenkins, where Malcolm Jenkins was like, fuck you, Drew. You need, no, that's not what he said. Malcolm Jenkins said, sometimes.
He said, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that's what he said. And then he pulled it down.
But, yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Colston was much more diplomatic in his response. And I think, like, and I showed that to my wife. I was like, look what Colston said. And Colston is a quiet person, being that he said what he said the way he said it. Like, I think that's the impact. So you got to keep that in mind. Breeze is coming from one perspective. He said it at the wrong moment in time. Again, I think it's okay for him if he personally wants, if he wants to honor the flag in the way he does. Good for him. That's what makes America a good country, a wonderful country to live in, that we've all been born and raised in. But at the same time, you can't be so self-centered that you can't see another man struggle. And if another man chooses to kneel because he's silently protesting, and let's remember, there was an Army Ranger who suggested the Kaepernick.
Nate Boyer. He used to be an NFL player.
Yep.
Nate Boyer is the man who suggested it. And then here's the one more thing I got to make on this point about this whole thing. It needs to be said. There's so many. If you talk to 100 military people in the military personnel, 50 of them are going to say, hell no, salute the flag. And the other 50 are going to say, man, we fight for the right to kneel.
Right. That's what I fought for.
We fight for. So, like, I think we get caught up in it so much. It's like, look, there's 300 plus million Americans. We're not going to agree on this topic. But what we should agree on is that sometimes people make mistakes. And you know what? It's okay to forgive them. But at the end of the day, I say this all the time. Try to be nicer to each other. Breeze messed up, but he had the right apology, and his wife said the right thing. And I mean, if you'd asked me this question, Nate, the day after he said what he said, I probably would have had a lot different response. But
right.
like most things in life, we need to give things some time to breathe before we condemn them. And I feel a little better now, but I always say this too. When somebody makes a mistake, their words are fine. Once their actions show otherwise over a length of time, then you can feel better. You can feel a lot better about, you know, the things that are happening.
Yeah, like, as Marcus said before we started recording, like, Drew's not he's not fully back at the cookout yet, but he can drive by and get a plate. Like, you're still on probation for a little bit, but you can come get a plate.
I will say some of the reaction was overboard. Like, I understand that, his players had every right to be upset at him, but some of the clout chasing from the media side and personality side of people just recording these messages directed at Drew Brees. I would love to hear these people say this stuff to Drew Brees' face. You know, it's easy to be hypercritical and upset from behind your keyboard or even behind your camera. But when you're face to face with a person and you're saying some of the things that you're saying about them, that just doesn't happen. So I thought it went a little bit too far.
Yeah, that's
the other thing. Well, I'm gonna say real quick, Mike. The other thing about what Drew said is, you can say the right thing at the wrong time, but it can also have, you know, by saying that in the wrong time, it could be the right time, because without Drew saying what he said when he said it, I don't know if we get to that video where all the NFL players, well, not all the NFL players, but like these prominent NFL players, including Pat Mahomes, who was the big one in that video for me, because he's a capital S star, right? Like, he's arguably the best quarterback in the league, just coming off a Super Bowl. He's somebody that, let's be real, white people are very comfortable with. Like, he's not Colin Kaepernick. And the fact that Pat Mahomes was in this video with Ezekiel Elliott and all these other players, and then the very next day, something that I didn't think I would see is Roger Goodell coming out and apologizing. I don't know if we get to Roger Goodell apologizing without Drew Brees stepping in it a couple days earlier.
Yeah. Ooh, no, that apology. That was something.
You definitely don't get the Goodell apology. That's not happening without Brees.
Well, Brees and then the players, that they had their video of the day before he apologized. That they, the NFL went
that's
rogue.
That's what
on.
I was talking about with Mahomes.
Yeah. The combination of the two, I think, were, put him on the spot.
And good, shout out to Roger, who did almost everything right. There was one small word missing from that apology, Mike Mills.
Well, I don't want to defend Roger Goodell, but.
Yeah, me either.
My guess is there's probably something in that settlement. Illegal. Yeah, that prevents him from maybe not mentioning Kaepernick's name, but to mention any thing that might, admit guilt or anything like that, where, I think there is a reason why he wasn't mentioned.
As somebody who definitely never went to law school, I got a I got a feeling that, like, I heard people, like, I hear people screaming at the top of their lungs. They're like, you know, he didn't mention Kaepernick, or mm-hmm. he needed to that day offer him a job. And I'm like, there may be some legal reasoning why he can't do one or both of those things. So, like, and look, man, to get me to defend anything Roger Goodell says has to be you know, that's a monumental thing, because I think I can't stand Roger Goodell as a commissioner. But, you know, there's
let it something. Go. Let that replay go, Mike. let it go.
they booked the territory, man. The Rams were booked to go to the Super Bowl that year. No doubt in my mind.
What and, a boring
you know, the
game.
Whole bounty scandal wasn't real. But anyway, I mean, like I said, I could go on and on, but Roger Goodell is a moron's moron. He's a millionaire as a moron. But anyway, you know, it's hard for me to defend him, but I'm like what Marcus said. I don't think that he could have brought up his name. I don't think he could have said anything about him. I think there's some legal stuff there where he just is, you know, it's best for him to just stay away from it.
Yeah, that's probably right. Like I think in a way, in a crazy way, maybe this brings the two sides closer together, being Kaepernick in the NFL. But yeah, there's probably no way he could have said it given the settlement and everything.
And I think Goodell wants him signed, and I think that was probably the case even before the settlement. But, you know, I think you only have so much power as a commissioner. Like, you can't tell.
Well, that's another big thing with this, Marcus, because to my knowledge, as of the day we're recording this, which is on Thursday, none of the owners, particularly one owner in Dallas, in your neck of the woods, Mike, none of the owners have said anything about what the players have said. None of the owners have said anything really about kind of the racial sentiment going on in the country right now. I think the Cowboys put out like a statement as a team, but we haven't heard from Jerry himself on this.
Nope.
You know, something that just bothers me about this with these owners, how hard is it to just condemn racism? Like, I mean, I know the NFL as a whole did it, and I don't know if they feel like they're under the umbrella of it, but, like, why is that so hard? It's 2020. Why is that so hard? Like, what the hell? Why is that so hard? Just condemn it. I know it's the easy thing to do right now, but you better do it. You better do it, because everybody's watching. So mm-hmm. just do it. And
you don't know what you're talking about, CM Punk. Shut up, man.
I mean, oh, come on. Let's bring it back to wrestling, yes.
I'm sorry, I derailed your thoughts, Mike. It had to be said, though.
You know, like, okay, so hold on. Like, this is something totally different, but I got to get this in. So I was telling y'all this before we started. The country is so on edge right now with everything. And I share with y'all that, like, on Facebook and Twitter last week, I posted a picture of my kids. And all I posted was like five hearts and five thumbs up with the two pictures. And, you know, one of my kids, well, he's Nate's complexion. So, you know, he's Nate's complexion. That's self-explanatory. There's no doubt in your mind when you see him what he is. My daughter, well, she's as light as me. She's even lighter than Johnny B. Bad, Marcus. You know? but, you know, if you look at her hair, you know, it's very curly. So obviously she's African-American. But she's very, 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 very fair skinned. So I post this picture of my kids, and, you know, I'm just like, look, I'm gonna spread some love to the social media world. And everybody's on edge. You know, you got this group, you got the racists out here fighting with people who are leading the cause to condemn racism. And I just post this picture. In 3 days' time or 2 days' time, I can't remember exactly, because these days are running together, like Marcus said, I'm getting emails to the BTT email inbox and tweets saying all lives matter. Now, I need to point out to everybody, listen to this. If you go to my Twitter, at Mike504Saints, I did not tweet out Black Lives Matter. I simply posted two pictures. That's all I did. That's how on edge this country is right now, like with everything. So, and the reason I bring this up is, slow down people out there, the racist, because if you tweet me All Lives Matter and I haven't even tweeted Black Lives Matter, you are a racist, in my opinion. You have some racist tendencies. Maybe you're not a racist, but you got some racist tendencies in you.
Yeah.
Or just ignorant.
There you go too, Marcus. That's actually better. You're just ignorant. Why are you going to tweet that to me? Why are you going to tweet All Lives Matter because I posted a picture of my kids? This is the world we're in right now. And that's why so much is brought to the surface. And we really got to just, you know, I think we all got to breathe. We're going to get through this. But I think sports is eventually going to help us heal whenever it comes back. When I say heal, I mean real change. I don't mean we just go, oh, yeah, you know, we fought a little bit and did some protests and, you know, that's it. No, I think eventually sports will help things along because sports always do kind of. That's the great thing about sports. If you sit in a building, you know, Marcus, I mean, you're in L.A. I can speak as a Saints fan. I know when I sit in that Superdome in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. When I would go to games, there's white folks and black folks that get along great.
Yeah.
Now, they might see each other outside that stadium and they don't have their Saints gear on and they'll fight about something. But inside that stadium, they come together. So that's why I say sports can bring us together. Sports can do good for us. And hopefully that's what will happen. You know, hopefully that'll help what's going on in the world. But we all got to come together, everybody. Don't be a racist. It ain't that hard, man. There's good and bad of all kinds. So please stop looking at a group of people and saying, oh, y'all are bad because of the color of your skin. That's not how it works.
So what you're saying, Mike, is don't be racist. I agree with that. But what about if you're a racer? Because one of the things that shocked me as a black man that has grown up in the South, Mike Mills, is NASCAR banning the Confederate flag. what do you make of that, brother?
So I had heard years ago, and this is what was interesting when I heard that. So I had heard years ago from this lady that I used to work with. She was a big NASCAR fan. When I first moved to Texas, she was an older white lady. She was a big NASCAR fan. And one day she was talking to me, and she was a big Dale Earnhardt and Dale Earnhardt Jr. fan. And I haven't researched this. Maybe y'all know this. So she was talking about one day about the going to the races. She was like, have you ever been? I'm like, nah, you know, not my cup of tea. I said, I did watch a little NASCAR back in the day, but, you know, it wasn't always my cup of tea. So she was like, she just went off on a tangent. She was just talking about, you know, the racetrack in Fort Worth, Texas. And she said, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr., has led the charge to, you know, bringing down the Confederate flag at race events. And this is like 15 years ago. I was like, really? So I've seen pictures of the races and I've seen the flag, you know, flapping in the wind, but I'd never, you know, it's NASCAR. I mean, like, that's all I say, you know, like look, let me make a statement. I don't think every NASCAR fan is a racist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's unfair, just as much as I think it's unfair to say every police officer is bad, just like I think it's unfair to say black folks are bad or white folks are bad. Like, I think that's just, then you're just going in for this, you know, you're just creating stereotypes. So I don't think all NASCAR fans are racist. I think there are NASCAR fans that are like, yeah, it's probably time. But I don't know, man. It actually kind of shocked me. I don't know if I ever thought. For one, I don't know if her story about Dale Earnhardt Jr. was true. But two, I don't know if I ever thought that NASCAR would ever take that stance. Like, I just that felt like, man, that's something big there.
So here's something that's crazy, Marcus, because for me, like, I'm right with you, Mike, because, like, I was never a NASCAR fan. Like, I liked drivers. Like, I liked Junior and there was a couple other drivers that I liked, but I worked at Richmond International Speedway one year doing an IndyCar event, and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And like, there's people on the Inway or whatever the hell it's called. And so there was a race, like, so I did that for, I was one of the crew members, you know, and it was me and Jack Arute, and I was holding up Jack Arute's cue cards or whatever the hell it was at the time. Mm-hmm. And so then there was a NASCAR race a couple months later at Richmond. And so my buddy that had worked with me on the crew was like, hey, you know, we're not doing the crew, but you just want to come up and see the race. And this is my first, last, and only NASCAR event I've been to, Marcus Vandenberg, because I went there, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. Because I remember from when I was at the Indy event that they had, like, people were grilling and like, old white ladies had sold, like, murals or, like, blankets you could buy with Dale Earnhardt Jr. and stuff like that. And it was like a carnival inside of this race. And so I was like, now hearing myself say the carnival inside of this race, there's a joke there that you can write yourself, ladies and gentlemen. But so we go up there, and I'm so excited, Marcus. Like, you would never believe. I don't think you'd ever see somebody so excited to be at this NASCAR race, because I'm going to hang out with all these cool people and eat this good food and drink this good beer and watch some NASCAR until I fall asleep. And I get up there, and the first thing I see when I step out my buddy's car is a Confederate flag. I'm like, you sure we going to be cool? And he's a white guy. So he's like, yeah, no problem, man. We going to be cool. I'm like, you sure? And I'm gesturing with my head up to the direction of the Confederate flag. And he's like, oh, don't worry about that, man. Everybody's cool here. I'm like, okay. But let's just say that was the most, like, we didn't stay for the whole race, because after a while I was just like, yeah, we got to go. But I think we stayed there for about a good 2.5-3 hours, and it was just, like, awkward at best, just because – there wasn't anything overt, Mike. Like, there wasn't anybody, like, calling me the N-word or telling me to go home. But you can feel when you're not wanted in a place.
Yeah,
I mean, you probably got the feeling like everybody was looking at you. I mean, it was like, you were probably like, I mean, how many other black folks did you see there, Nate?
It was me, other than the people working at the concessions, it was me and an older black lady. So there was two of us on the infield.
There you go. So, like, you know, you just feel out of place, and yeah.
And I don't know how, like, I don't even, I never spoke to the lady, but I don't know, like, because she was, I think I was probably 30 at the time, so she probably had to be in her late 50s, early 60s. So I'm like, the amount of abuse this lady had to suffer just to be able to come to this racetrack over the years. She's a better person than me, because I was done after 2 hours, Mike.
And how long ago was this, Nate?
This was probably, I want to say, a good 10 years ago, maybe.
Okay. I went to Daytona in 2017, and similar experience where, so going back to the banning of the flag. So 2015, after Dylan Roof murdered the church doors, that's when NASCAR was like, hey guys, you know, if you could, can you leave your Confederate flag at home, please? And there is no definitive punishment, no real statement behind it. Like, you know, we're going to actually see this through. So people continue to display the Confederate flag. When I went to Daytona, to your point, yeah, as soon as you get there and you're sort of roaming around the infield before a race, you see the flag. And that, you know, maybe because I've seen the flag sort of out in the public, even parts of LA and parts of where I live, like, it's, you know, some people don't try to hide it. It wasn't until you see people who are dressed in outfits with the Confederate flag where you're like, oh, okay, like, this is different. This isn't like, you know, showing my, you know, flag off with my American flag or my Don't Tread on Me flag.
You made, like, it into a whole outfit.
You made it into an outfit. Like, you really about this life. So that's when I was like, oh, this is a little uncomfortable. But in terms of the diversity part, like, you know, behind the scenes, NASCAR, I think, has done a good job of not only trying to address diversity issues on, you know, the front facing product, but hiring black people behind the scenes that no one would know about unless you've been to a NASCAR race, you know, trying to do programs within, different pit teams. So, there is definitely some diversity within NASCAR. There is some diversity within the fan base, which I thought was kind of cool to see other people of color, not just black, but like black, brown, Indian, that were at Daytona. But, you know, it's definitely still majority white. And they're also trying to figure out how to salvage the white fans in general, because the fan base is shrinking in NASCAR. So I hope that by doing this, I think they're doing it for the right intentions, number one. But number two, I think that they're also going to get an increase of maybe especially during this down period in sports, maybe people who are now going to watch NASCAR and maybe stick with the sport because it feels more inclusive finally.
So they might lose some of that older white audience, but they'll gain younger white viewers and viewers of other colors.
Yeah, there was someone had a tweet this morning that spotlighted the fact that after NASCAR sent that announcement out last night that they had gained, I think, 2,000 new Twitter followers. And before they sent that out, they were sort of losing followers day by day just because their account's so big, so people are unfollowing. But yesterday, they were actually in the green. They were in the positive. And I do think people will, you know, I'm curious to see what the numbers were for last night's race that was on. But, you know,
Bubba Wallace.
Mm-hmm. I do think that NASCAR is like hockey. It's one of those things where if you go in person and you experience a race, you're more likely to enjoy the sport compared to just, you know, sort of watching it on TV.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
I think they did. I think they did good numbers on the because I was reading something that the ratings were really good for the race last night as we record this. Look, I applaud them. I think they did the right thing. I mean, it's a moment in time. We'll look back on, you know, 20 years from now and think, man, you know, they made the right move. And again, I like what Marcus said because I didn't realize, you know, I don't know if I understood how much NASCAR has done to be more diverse and more inclusive. So I applaud them for that. And I think that's good on their part. And like you said, Marcus, you wouldn't see it unless you go. Mm-hmm. I think I say this as somebody who is not a NASCAR fan. I think NASCAR in general has gotten a bad rap from like just general folks who don't know, like, because I guess you see the flag or because you know of NASCAR's, not you personally, but folks out there know of NASCAR's roots, you know, from the South. I think people just kind of make the assumption, oh, my God, all those redneck hillbillies that are, you know, racist fans. And I know a handful of folks that listen to Booking the Territory because, I mean, we cover classic Southern wrestling that are in our Facebook group and, you know, white guys our age or a little older. And there was a discussion one day about NASCAR on a page, and one of the listeners like was going off saying, "Oh my God, all NASCAR! It's just a bunch of racist hillbillies." And then like two of the guys that like chimed in the discussion, they were like, "What are you talking about? You're like, I'm not racist. I like NASCAR. I grew up in the South, and I like it. I enjoy watching the races." And I don't know. I've seen these guys' comments and on Facebook and what, and they don't come across as, you know, racist folks. They seem very, very cool. They love our show. I mean, they've never said anything that would make me, you know, how like sometimes people say certain things, Nate or Marcus, and you kind of like raise your eyebrow and you're like, oh, that's how you think. Like these guys they've never said anything like that. And this one guy is just going off about how all of NASCAR is racist. And they're like, I'm not racist. I just like watching racing. So I feel like NASCAR, like I feel like a lot of people think like that one person thought, a couple of people thought about NASCAR, and it's kind of unfair to them. I mean, it's unfair to them in the same way that, you know, some white Americans look at black folks and go, all black folks are bad. No, that's not the truth. It's you got to look at it through the same lens, man. There's not every NASCAR fan is not a racist.
Yeah.
So good for them on, you know, the things that they're doing to, you know, hopefully bring in more fans. And, you know, they got a business to sustain at the end of the day. I mean, we got to remember that. So there's that.
Well, it's like something that we always talk about with wrestling, Mike. You know, when you open the tent, so to speak, and when you include more black fans or more Latino fans or younger fans or female fans or fans from the LGBT community, like, there's not only is that the right thing to do, but there's money to be made, right? Like you're leaving money on the table if you're not out here trying to get black dollars or brown dollars or female dollars.
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something. I mean, dude, that you passing up a lot of money if you're not wanting to be more inclusive with your audience. I mean, black folks love spending money on entertainment. I mean,
yes.
You know, like, I think that's a misconception of some sort. Like, So like these businesses, whether it's, you know, the WWE or AEW or
you can go to anywhere. I was gonna say you can go to any mall in any major city that has a large black population, but maybe after the pandemic, go to any mall in any city that has a major black population, Mike, you're gonna see a brother wearing a NASCAR jacket that has never watched a NASCAR race.
For real. So like, you know, like, I mean, African Americans will spend money on entertainment. It's mm-hmm. just that, you know, in this day and age, if you're an African American, you want to know that your money is going to a company that appreciates your business. Yep. So, like, I mean, look, I think companies, the more companies realize that, I'm not just saying that about African Americans. It's about the LGBTQ community. I mean, there's more things than just color that make us diverse. I mean, so you know, catering to everybody, it can only help. I mean, major companies and small companies, bottom line.
One of the things I wanted to hit with you real quick, Mike, because I know you've done some coaching in your day, brother. We've had a couple stories this past week pop up on various campuses around the country where you've got players, both African American and in the case of your man Sunshine, aka Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, we've had even some prominent white players kind of step up and speak out about what's been going on and what they've been seeing, whether it be with George Floyd or in the case of Dabo Swinney and some, I guess, some of his assistants. Some of the players have spoken up about the way that coaches have treated them and how they felt prejudiced against. As somebody that has coached kids, Mike, like, what do you think about when you hear about these stories coming out of these kids feeling like they haven't been treated properly or fairly by the men that they've kind of been entrusted to kind of not only coach them on the field, but coach them in life?
It's kind of sad. And I don't know the Dabo story. I've only seen some funny memes on Twitter about it. I say funny. I just don't know exactly what he did, but I will say this. If you are a white coach in you know, big time college football or basketball, I hope you don't have skeletons in your closet when it comes to how you've treated your black players, because everything's about to, you know, percolate to the surface at this point. Mm. And over time, those stories will come out of folks. Nate, what did Dabo do? I'm curious as you're asking that question.
So with Dabo, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Marcus, it was one of his assistant coaches, and they were doing a drill. And one of the players yelled out after missing a block or something. He's like, you know, damn it, I blocked the wrong N-word. And the coach went up to him and was like, hey, we don't say the N-word around here. And he actually used the actual word to this black player. And so apparently, like, there was no, from the player's perspective, there was no kind of justice done or kind of Dabo taking this coach to the side and explaining, like, nah, you know, even though you don't want him to say that, you don't have the right to say that to correct him on that point. Then there's the other point, Mike, that's kind of like, should you as a middle-aged white dude be policing the way these black players talk to each other? Like, that's another conversation that might not even be in the same umbrella.
Let me tell you something that happened once with a team I was coaching.
Okay.
So all of my teams were pretty diverse, like African American, Latino, white, all on the same team. And my kids were just playing around one day, and one of my African American kids dropped the N-word. And I said, for reasons that I didn't want my white players thinking that it would then be okay for them to say that, I said, hey, y'all, just, you know, let's try not to use that word. I said, let's not use it as a team. Like, let's not go there. Because my fear as a coach is I'm thinking about ramifications down the line.
Right.
Kids are going to get into a fight over something. I mean, it happens all the time. They get into a little spat. What it is, you know, you took my ball. Yeah. You know, any little thing. You got the flag that I had. You name it, they'll get into an argument about it. That's what 8, 9, 10, 11. I coached up to 13 years old.
See, I was going to say, like, especially when they're that young, like, I think there is a difference when you're coaching kids that age versus coaching college players.
Yes. So, like, I was like, look, you know, y'all, no, we not going to do that. The other thing, the reason I wanted to, like, kind of, like, nip it in the bud was the last thing I want is a 10-year-old white kid at that age thinking, oh, because his friend, his legitimate friend,
right,
that he's a teammate of and that he loves and respects as a teammate, he hears him say it, and because his black teammate heard him, he says it, and now he says it to his black teammate, and the black teammate doesn't take offense to it. Well, 8 years from now, when he drops that same word in front of somebody who is like, bro, I don't know you like that, you know, that's going to be a problem. So, yeah, I two things, Nate. I mean, you know, it's probably different dealing with college athletes, obviously, than, you know, 8 to 13-year-olds. But, yeah, I nipped it in the bud. Let me say it like that.
And I honestly, like, you know, I have an issue, not really an issue, but I do kind of raise my eyebrow when it's at the college level. But that's for different reasons, because in my opinion, they're basically professionals who aren't paid. So there's a whole other conversation with the college players. But in terms of, like, the kids, yeah, I don't have any issue with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you nailed it. I think college athletes nowadays, they're basically pros.
Oh, Dabo.
Oh, I think what I'm wondering, Mike, is how long do you think this lasts, though? Like, this moment that we're in, because I was on post-wrestling last week, I believe, on Monday, when they did their show after Raw. And it was me, John Pollock, Wei Ting, and Andrew Thompson. And, you know, the whole first hour of the show was just kind of discussing what had gone on with George Floyd and the protests and things of that nature. And John asked me, you know, did I think that this would have lasting effects? Like, would there be actual change to come from the past week? And my answer to him, Mike, was I have enough faith and optimism that this will be a sustainable issue. But that runway only extends as far as white people's interest in the issue. Mm-hmm. Because the minute there's something else to focus on, and we don't have, like you said, Mike, everybody working together towards the same goal, and it's just, you know, black and brown people working towards the goal, then I think we're back where we started.
I think you're on to something. Hopefully it keeps up. Hopefully it's all peaceful. We didn't even talk about this, but the looting kind of hurts me.
Okay, let's talk about it, because I'm of two minds about it, Mike. So I want to hear what you think about it.
I understand. So, well, first off, let's talk about the fact that some of the looting isn't even of the people protesting.
The outside actors.
Yeah, we need to mention that, because I don't think that gets mentioned enough. I don't think it gets mentioned enough that you have some that are looting who are taking advantage of a situation and trying to make the situation worse. So you got that happening.
And a good number of them happen to be, you know, our Caucasian brothers and sisters, but they're not the ones getting blamed for all the destruction.
Right. And so that part is, you know, that's unfortunate. I understand looting is a bit of a language. It is when someone is so frustrated, they're just tired. And
Martin Luther King, rioting is the language of the unheard.
That's right. So, like, I understand that side of it. But I would hope that eventually it gets tempered. And then you get back to, you know, protesting that are peaceful, you know, peaceful protests. And when people peacefully protest, I think you can, if you do it long enough and you sustain it, you can see real action. And I'm hoping, as I say all that, God, I hope It continues, and I hope America doesn't get tired. I'll go back to what I said, though, Nate. I think this is a moment in time in history where it's the perfect storm. You got a lot of people frustrated. You got a lot of people out of work due to the pandemic. You got a lot of just frustrated individuals, frustrated with the way things have gone right now in this country for years. And right now they have the time to protest because they're not out of work. Yep. You know, they're not working. So hopefully that means that this will continue. And, you know, African Americans, white folks, Latino folks will all continue to pull together to, you know, see real change.
Yeah, I agree. And Marcus, real quick, did you have anything on the rioting or the looting?
You know, the first,
because like we talked about on the last episode, like you've actually lived through this before, you know, being out there in L.A. So.
Yeah, the first night in Minneapolis, I mean, I sort of understood it. It was when it started trickling down to other cities, especially in L.A., where it, I mean, I do think there's going to be, whether it's, you know, 6 weeks from now, 6 months from now, you're going to see a lot of these arrests come through because you just had cameras focused in on people going in and out of stores. And if you don't think the cops are not going to collect all this footage,
right?
I think we're going to really, you know, find out who exactly was behind a lot of this looting. And as you mentioned, there was a lot of white people. There are definitely some black people. A lot of young people. And, you know, it's hard. Like, look, 40 million people are out of work. People need sources of income, and if you know, a Gucci purse is going to get you your rent for the month, then hey, like I understood why they were, well, I didn't understand. I guess I wasn't surprised why they were doing it, but it definitely did not, at that point, was not in support of George Floyd. Like, this was just I think a bigger issue of the current state of the country, the current state of the economy, and the fact that people are truly just hurting for money at this point.
Yeah, like I'm with both of you guys. Like, I certainly understand the emotion behind it. And like that first night, like, even though like I'm not one for the destruction of these small businesses that you know, these people were struggling already due to the pandemic, and now, you know, they might not have a business to come back to. I understood that, the frustration of the people, though. Like, and I don't want to sound like I'm an anarchist, or I don't want to end up on some government list, Mike Mills. I don't want people tapping my phones. But when we saw the police station get burned down, like, I understood that moment for those people who felt like that building was a symbol of oppression.
That made more sense than Target.
Like, I got it.
Yeah.
But I do hope that, like you're saying, that the protests continue, the marches continue, the voting continues, like people speaking to their local politicians continues. I hope the constructive stuff continues and there's less or none of the destructive stuff that we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, Nate, like I understood that moment. I don't know if I like that it happened, but I get like the frustration and the anger. We all are moved emotionally sometimes. And I think the people who did that were just so frustrated, so emotional, that it happened. And I bet you, here's the thing. 10 years from now, if you could, you know, talk to all of the people that were involved in that, they probably would say, or they might say, I don't say probably, they might say, man, we shouldn't have did that. That was wrong. But in the moment, we've all had moments of anger and frustration. And I think that's kind of what you saw. But I'll go back to what all three of us are saying. Like, at the end of the day, we want to see it done peacefully. We want to see it done where you know, I think it was Dr. King said something like, you know, when you like, y'all have all seen the movie Selma, right? I'm assuming.
Yep.
Okay.
No.
When the protesters.
No. Really, Marcus?
Shut up, Nate. Continue on, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, like I can't remember the exact word. It's been a few years since I've seen it, but I can't remember the exact word. It's like, so the protesters are coming across a bridge, right? And then you got all these cameras on the what's going on. CBS, NBC, national news is rolling, you know, rolling this. And all of a sudden you see these police attack just citizens. And all of a sudden you get, I mean, the reason you saw change, here they are peaceful. They're peacefully marching and they're attacked by police officers. So like that creates empathy for people. And I think like when you peacefully protest, that's why I understood that first night with the police station. But when you peacefully protest, people feel empathy for you. It's like, okay, I hear your cause. Now, again, I understand sometimes you got to scream and holler at the top of your lungs to get the attention of some. But man, I hope
that now you have the attention.
Yes.
Now people are listening. So now how are we going to move forward now?
Yes. Yes. So that's why I like the I mean, I want to see peaceful protests. I want people to fight for what's right. At the end of the day, I'll be damned if I'm on the wrong side of history. It's the last thing I'll say. And anybody who's on the wrong side, bless your heart.
and one last thing on the riots, Marcus, before we wrap things up this week, I'm just going to put this out here and say, on the one hand, you got people burning stuff up in the name of freedom, in the name of equality, in the name of justice. And on the other hand, you got West Virginia Mountaineers fans tipping over cars and burning mattresses in the name of beating Marshall. Who's right? Who's wrong? Who's to say, Marcus? I don't make the rules.
Marshall of all schools.
Marshall without Randy Moss.
Randy Moss,
Moss ain't been there in 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
No Byron Leftwich. You beat Marshall and you burning up people's cars. Okay. Yeah. that's my hot take for the week, Mike Mills.
Oh, man. That's great.
but if people want to hear more of your hot takes, brother, let them know. You know, we hadn't talked a lot about wrestling this week, except for that shade that I threw at one particular wrestler. But if people want to hear more about booking the territories and all the other stuff you do, where can they check you out, man?
Come check out Booking the Territory. We're down to one show per week because we finished our Smoky Mountain Wrestling review. Well, we're almost finished. We got like two more to go as of probably this airing. But
aren't you glad you got past the New Jack OJ storyline before all this popped off?
Man, New Jack was something else, man. New Jack and Smoky Mountain is something else, man. I'm assuming a lot of listeners have listened to the show may have seen Dark Side of the Ring, yep, in the New Jack episode. New Jack is something else in Smoky Mountain. So
that's so crazy because like I think a lot of people hadn't seen that, Mike, but it's like you and me been talking about those promos for years.
Dude, he thanked OJ for killing two white people, and he said, I want to give a shout out to my boy OJ Simpson. Keep up the good work, two less for us to worry about. I mean, damn. That's vicious.
In the mid-90s. That's,
1994, to be exact, is when he said that. So anyway, we covered all of Smoky Mountain. Right now, we're 4 years into our NWA Saturday Night on TBS recap show. So, like, all of the shows that you would have watched in the mid-80s from 85 on, we do recaps there. Myself, Hardbody Harper, Doc Turner. They call us the Unprofessional Wrestling Podcast for a reason, because the jokes are terrible. We're not politically correct. But we do stay away from politics and religion. I mean, so take that for what it's worth. But we have a good time, and come check us out. But you've been warned, the language is ridiculously strong and very much not safe for work. Just look for us, Book in the Territory, search us wherever you get your podcast from, wherever you listen to this. Also, you can find us if you go to tinyurl.com/bttpod. It's a great way to find us as well. One other thing. So I'm on Twitter at Mike504Saints, and the BTT Twitter feed is at BTT_podcast. We do have a Patreon page where we cover like World Class and a bunch of other we do like one-off shows where we'll cover an AWA show and things like that. So come check that out if you're interested. But look, come check out the free one first, see if you like it. And then if you want to become a patron, you can become one. But I have a good time on it. Nate's been on there. It's been a while, Nate. We'll have to get you back sometime.
I hadn't been on since probably WrestleMania a couple years ago. Was it the WrestleMania with Kofi one?
Yes, it was. Now that you say that, we did the WrestleMania recap. Right after Kofi won. So yeah, it's been over a year. Now that you say that, that's true. I had to talk to you when Kofi won, because I mean, look, man, Kofi did that, and I was so glad they pulled the trigger on it. So I was like, yeah, because I think me and you were gonna burn down everything if Kofi didn't win.
we're like two unarmed looters at Titan Towers.
yeah. I think we would burn it down.
Just me and Mills trying to burn up Vince's office.
Yes. Yeah. I think they got the memo. They knew they had to put the belt on Kofi that night. So we ain't gonna talk about what they did to him after. Kofi won the strap, and Marcus, I definitely still hate Triple H, but you can hear more about that. If you just go to search Book in the Territory, wherever you get your podcast from. Yeah, it's a good time, man. I love talking classic Southern wrestling in all of its inappropriateness. Because let me tell you something. When you watch some of those promos from the past and some of the racist stuff that are said, I can't lie. We laugh, but it's like we laugh out of holy crap. The world was so different back then.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely check out Mike and the crew, Book in the Territory. They do good work. Marcus Vandenberg, where can the people find your work? Where can they check you out? Are you going to be getting a famous NFL quarterback to step in something this week? Since that's what's hot right now. You gonna have an exclusive with Tom Brady this week, brother?
I was thinking Jameis Winston.
Oh, Jameis? No, don't talk to Jameis right now. Let that man live.
All right.
I'm telling you, look, that might have been the funniest thing ever, though, Mike. Like, the day after Drew had said his statement, when everybody was like, what the hell? Like, we can't mess with Drew Brees no more. The amount of positive Jameis Winston tweets that I saw on my timeline, I had never seen so much love for Jameis Winston in his entire career.
Yeah, he was getting love from Saints fans who hate him. I mean, like you know, it's like, wow, the world changes overnight, literally. I mean, it was amazing, man.
Shout out to Jameis. I think he's gonna be a good backup for Drew, though.
He'll hold that clipboard really well. Yeah,
he's gonna hold the clipboard really, really well as a third stringer. I will say that.
And he got that LASIK right now, Mike Mills. I don't know what you're talking about. He got his eyes fixed, so. He's going to throw 60 touchdowns and 60 interceptions this year.
Goodness. I hope not.
But go ahead, Marcus. Where can people find you in your pseudo interview with Jameis Winston coming up?
Yes, you can find me on social media at Marco Will, MarcoWill. And I also did the Gully Blanchard podcast on
Gully
Monday.
Blanchard. That's an interesting name.
Yes. Yeah, we talked wrestling for an hour, sort of about how when I first discovered wrestling, and just good conversation. So where
can you find that?
Wherever you listen to your podcast. I don't know if there's a website for it, but the name Gully Blanchard will stand out in terms of a podcast name. So
yeah, I have to check that out.
I got a question, Marcus. Mm-hmm. I saw the tweet, which, by the way, that was fabulous. The one-man gang and then Akeem, Drew Brees yesterday versus 2 days later.
Oh, yes.
So that's a podcast that posted that?
Oh, the – no, I don't think he created the that meme. I just think he shared it.
Okay. I got you. Okay. Yeah. That meme was tremendous. I had to send that to a bunch of my partners down in New Orleans, and they were dying laughing.
Yeah, this podcast, it's had definitely some bitter names to myself. I mean, Bit Poo's been on there.
Okay.
Stat Guy Greg's been on. Kel Dansby from the Corner's been on. They recently had, what's his face? Guy Evans, who wrote the Nitro book, Rise and Fall of WCW. Josiah Williams has been on, so they've had a lot of guests, and they all taught wrestling. So you can check that out as well.
Yeah, I'm about to check that out. So yeah, shout out to Gully Blanchard. For me, Marcus, you can check me out in the number 8 MOZAIK at Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Check out the Facebook page, facebook.com/kingsofsport. Twitter, Cospod, KOS_POD. The Patreon, you know, you are, since you're already out there, you know, signing up for Mike's Patreon, you might as well go ahead and sign up for ours as well. Patreon.com/kingsofsport. Marcus wasn't the only one, listeners, who was moonlighting this week on a podcast. Marcus is on Gully Blanchard. But you can check out Bodega Box Office right now, which is a show that reviews hip-hop movies, you know, movies that were produced, directed, or starred a rapper. And obviously, being an Outkast fan, they brought me on to talk about Idlewild, which was Outkast's wonderful failure of a movie. like, Idlewild, you know, I want to make the joke before Mike does. Because I'm gonna steal his thunder. I'm gonna take his slings and arrows and turn them against him. Outkast Idlewild is like the movie version of the Falcons Patriots Super Bowl, because there's so many good things in Idlewild from Andre and Big Boy, but it just doesn't work out in the end. And yeah. So, you know, we talk about the mess that was Idlewild, and you can check that out at Bodega Box Office, wherever you find your podcast. But yeah, that's gonna do it. We solved racism, guys. Congratulations.
We tried.
Hey, that's all we can do, Mike, is we can try.
Yes.
Before we get out of here, I have to say it one more time. Marcus's story about Mark Merrow, aka Johnny B. Bad, is still the greatest thing I've ever heard in podcast history.
So during the show, I was checking out his Twitter feed because I wanted to see if he was, you know, Lives Matter. He's not All Lives Matter. He's not Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter.
Don't
either.
Say it, Mark. Don't say it.
No. He's not. But he did release a statement about George.
Oh, I thought you was gonna say he was gonna be out there wearing one of them shirts that the Undertaker likes to wear that I'm not gonna mention.
Oh no. He took it back to religion stuff, which is cool. But he did address it though, and you know his Twitter feed is mostly like positivity tweets and
We really do. Like,
should,
I know we
I
say
bet you we could get him on the show.
We got to get Johnny B. Bad on the show.
Yeah. So
every time we talk about this man, Mike Mills, like for the last 4 years, every time we bring up this man's name, we're like, we should get him on the show. And we never do. Like, we need to follow up and get this man on the show, Marcus, because you know he's ready to talk about helping the kids and all that other stuff, but really. We just want to hear him talk about how everybody thought he was black back in the day, but he really wasn't.
Yeah. It's just funny, man. Like, I can't, every time I think about Marcus's reaction to the first time he found out he was white dude that was just really well tanned.
Yep.
I die laughing every time.
Did you see his tweet after Little Richard passed a couple weeks ago?
No.
Yes.
Oh, it was great. He was like, thanks to Little Richard for allowing, I forget how he phrased it, but like allowing this kid from New York to live out his dreams of playing Little Richard. And he's like, if Richard was here today, he'd say, Johnny, you still ain't as pretty as me.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he seems like a good dude.
Yeah.
Marcus, didn't you also tweet about it as well? Like,
yes,
you and TJ. Yeah.
Okay.
You responded.
Yeah, and somebody like posted that tweet in my Facebook group for
my
Book of the Territory. Yeah, and I didn't comment on it, but I just died laughing just thinking about the fact that every time I think about that story, it's the greatest thing ever. Because, I mean, I remember the first time I saw him, I was like, oh, this dude looks like Little Richard. He's definitely a brother. And... all these years later, it's like, no, he's not.
See, it didn't hit me till he went to the WWE, and I was like, like some of that Little Richardness then kind of worn off when he was just a wild man. I'm like, I don't know if this guy's black, ladies and gentlemen. So then I did some research. I'm like, oh, he's like totally not black. He's like Italian and Jewish.
He must have deleted his response here. I found the original tweet, and he definitely did respond, but I don't see his response in here still, so maybe he cleaned up this. He's working us, man. Kayfabe.
You never know. He might come back, man, and you don't want it on a record.
Yeah.
I mean, saying it.
This is the time for Johnny B. Bad to come back and heal the nation.
Coming back.
White man in blackface singing Little Richard songs is what's going to bring us all together.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, the story wasn't the story like Dusty was a Little Richard fan and
yeah. Mike Marcus and I have said this on the show a bunch of times. Like, obviously, blackface is wrong. People don't do it if you're listening, not even on Halloween. But if there's one white man that gets to do blackface, it's Mark Mero. Like, he can be Johnny B. Bad.
No.
That's the one we'll allow.
No, he doesn't need to. He just needs a tan. Thing.
Yeah, just go outside.
Just tan.
He doesn't need to. He just needs to. I mean, look, he's already pulled the wool over Marcus's eyes years ago and mine.
Marcus was a young, impressionable black child. Johnny B. Bad was who he related to. He speaks for me.
He's probably darker than Little Richard, right? He had to be darker than Little Richard.
Yeah, he was darker than Little Richard.
Yeah.
He was dark, Mark. When Johnny B. Bad was a brother. I mean, he was dark, man. That tan was ridiculous.
Yeah. Consummate worker. Shout out to Johnny B. Bad.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah, that's going to do it for this edition of the Kings of Sport. Mike Mills, Booking the Territory, appreciate you as always, brother, especially during these crazy times that we're living through, this moment in history, as you mentioned, my friend.
No doubt. I love it, man. I don't mind. Appreciate it, Nate. Thanks for the invite.
And Marcus, I will holler at you next week. Shout out to Baby Simba, who was on the tracks for those listeners with keen ears earlier.
Yeah, he's currently yelling now.
He said, "I got something to say. Don't silence my voice." But yeah, good to hear from young Simba again. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the show. We appreciate it. And we'll be back next week with an all-new edition of the world's most dangerous sports show, the Kings of Sport podcast. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for Young Simba, for Mike Mills, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. I was trying to think, Marcus. I was stuck. I was in the
deep
air.
Deep in thought there.
I was going to say, I didn't know if I wanted to go serious or if I wanted to go funny. Johnny B. Bad still on my mind. So, yeah, we'll just say good night to everyone and try to be better people. Don't be racist. And go watch Johnny B. Bad on the network because you've been down with the Kings.
Here comes Johnny B. Bad, and you don't want to make him mad. He's as pretty as a picture. Just like Little Richard. Don't be fooled by his looks. He's got a mean left hook. So if you don't want to end up sad, don't mess with Johnny B. Bad. Well, he's so hurt that man from New York City, you see him in the spotlight.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-D-D-Y,
let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to leave it all on the mat. Because that's what I do when I get it done so I can do it. Yeah!